This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. So it's a question, why should I defend Citizens United, the Citizens United ruling in Supreme Court, which basically allows for corporate and union funding of campaigns and eliminates a lot of the limits on those campaigns. Not enough elimination of limits, in my view, but at least moves in the right direction of more freedom to give candidates money. Well, I think you should defend it because it's the right position. It's a position that's pro-free speech. Just because you're rich shouldn't mean the state has a right to muzzle you. So whether you're rich because you own a corporation or you're rich as an individual doesn't matter. Or you're rich because you're a union and you collect dues. You should be able to use your money to express yourself, including to express yourself about any particular political candidate, a particular political issue. And that's what we're talking about. What campaign finance reform tries to do is say, no, the rich can't use their money to advocate for a particular position. But that's ridiculous. Free speech means I can use whatever means I have at my disposal that are mine to advocate for anything that I want, whether you like it or not. And it has nothing to do with how much money I spend on it. Free speech is free speech. Money is not the issue. So if you believe in free speech, or in other words, if you believe in liberty and freedom, you have to defend Citizens United and much, much more than Citizens United. What you have to defend is the elimination of all barriers to campaign financing, to speech, to discussion, to buying ads, to expressing oneself. Whether it's expensive or whether it's cheap is irrelevant to the ability to express oneself. Okay, what are my thoughts on the very apparent primacy of consciousness involved in the Spokane NAACP president who said she's black because she feels black, even though she was born to white parents? I find the whole discussion offensive, disturbing, disgusting. I don't like this whole I'm black, I'm white, I'm yellow, I'm green, I'm from this racial group, I'm from that racial group. It's all racist, collectivistic garbage in my view. Stop it. So now she said in the end, she said, you know, what does it mean to say I'm racially black? I mean, that's racist, it's garbage. She doesn't have the genes, so to the extent that race is determined by genes, she doesn't have them. Most of us are all kinds of conglomerations of genes from all kinds of places around the world, and it turns out we all started from Africa. So what does it all mean? It's meaningless. Now, she said she's ethnically black. What does that mean? You know, is she really part of that ethnicity? What does it mean? Now, she could say, I'm culturally black. I'd accept that. She likes, you know, music that comes from that culture or whatever. I mean, there's a Jewish culture. There's a Southern culture. You could argue, black culture, though I'm not sure it's one culture. It might be regional. There are other cultures. You could say that. But that's about as far as I would go. And she was making the case, the primacy of consciousness, also primacy of emotions, which is prevalent in our culture. I feel black, therefore I am black. I feel like X, therefore I am X. It's not about knowledge. It's not about reality. It's not about truth. It's about emotion. It's about feeling. So I think it's just a reflection of how far culture has come in terms of placing emotion as the most important thing, emotion at the top. Plus, I also find it an expression of the fact that we live in a very racist culture in which people continue, in spite of everything that's happened, to self-identify and self-categorize, and that the law institutionalizes these racial categories. How many blacks live in the neighborhood? How many whites? How many Hispanics? And we need to sue the realtors because it's not balanced, or it's not whatever, or affirmative action, or racial categories in schools. All of that should be thrown out. And some of you had heard me say that when my son was born, a nurse came in and she wanted me to fill out the birth certificate. And one of the questions on the birth certificate is, what race is your child? And I find that offensive and disgusting. And I told her, what, do I live in Nazi Germany? That it's the government needs to know the race of my child? What relevance is that to the government? And she said, you can't have a birth certificate without filling out the race. So I'll know that we've overcome racism. I'll know that we live in a colorblind society when our birth certificate doesn't say what race we are, when the Census Bureau doesn't ask us what race we are, and when people stop thinking of themselves as white, black, yellow, green, or whatever, in terms of racial categories. Anyway, that's my rant on that one. Here's a quick one. Would an objectivist candidate for Congress have a shot at the election if he spent a ton of money? I don't know what a ton of money is, but hundreds of millions of dollars, billions? The answer is still no, no, no. The world is not determined by money. The world is determined by ideas. The world is not ready for ideas yet. Altruism is still the dominant ethic out there. A candidate like that, by spending a ton of money, would serve an educational purpose, would educate people. But to the extent that they were consistently objectivist, to the extent that they expressed their true views on the topics, on foreign policy, to doing away with Social Security, to eliminating the FDA, to eliminating all the alphabet agency soup agencies, they would lose no matter how much money they spent. Might still be a good marketing campaign, but don't expect to win anytime soon. Would I eliminate the tax loopholes that link health insurance to employment, even though to do so would constitute a tax increase? Yes, I would. And then I would find other ways to reduce taxes. The tax code is such a mess today that to get any kind of sanity around it and to stop it from creating massive distortions and perversions in the marketplace, it is true that some people's taxes are going to have to go up. But that is a consequence of the distortive nature of the mixed economy we live in, not a consequence of any particular action that you might make. So I would eliminate the tax loophole, but I'd also massively free up the whole health insurance and the whole health market so that you would benefit enormously from that freeing up. Now, of course, the alternative is to create a tax credit for healthcare for individuals that will mimic that of corporations. But I think it's easier to eliminate the loophole and then reduce taxes. And I generally am a supporter of eliminating all loopholes from charitable contributions to mortgage deductions to everything, and then lowering the taxes dramatically, dramatically. And at the same time, of course, cutting government spending so you actually have a net shrinkage of government. So here's a question, a funny question. Well, maybe it's not funny. Does the Catholic Church pose any threat to get its hands on political power over the U.S.? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's much more likely if anybody ever gets hands on political power in the U.S., it'll be the evangelicals. It's a much bigger group. It's a group much more interested in political power, qua political power. It's a group that plays off of people's emotions, which can rally the American people at some point, particularly in a time of crisis, around a particular cause and grab political power that way. The Catholic Church is too incompetent. It's been discredited by this whole priest abusing kids phenomena. It's too pseudo-intellectual. It's not emotional enough to really rally people around a cause like this. So no, I don't think the Catholic Church is a threat. I think religion is, but I don't think the Catholic Church is. Okay, I'm being asked about my analysis of Rand Paul, both the evaluation of him and his chances of winning. And so let me just say first that as a CEO of a 501c3 nonprofit organization, I don't take political stands. I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm not against anybody per se as a political candidate. I'm not endorsing or criticizing Rand Paul qua political candidate running for president. I'm just telling you what I think about him and about his chances of winning. And I think his chances of winning are very, very, very slim. I don't think he has a chance in hell, to put it in other words. And I think the reasons he doesn't have a chance in hell are his virtues, if you will. So Rand Paul actually has some good ideas. And the biggest one is the fact that he would propose to cut government spending by $500 billion. And he's proposed that. He's presented a budget to Congress affecting that. I don't think the American people want $500 billion cut in their budget. I mean, if they really understood the consequences of that, they really understood what programs would be slashed and cut and how much of the money that they get would be gone, I don't think they'd actually vote for it. So I don't think he's electable on that ground, on the ground that you know, he would actually reduce government effectively if he actually followed through on this. effectively from my perspective, but in a very scary way when it comes to the American people. So I like a lot of what he would do domestically in terms of cutting government spending, eliminating whole programs, eliminating whole departments of government, just reducing the scope and the scale of the federal government in dramatic fashion is the number one virtue of a Rand Paul. On the other hand, I think it would be horrible for capitalism because Rand Paul has positions that are very irrational. And to the extent that people associate his good views, i.e. shrinking government spending and getting the government out of the economy, with his irrational views, I think that does objectivism and the pro-free market movement harm. And he's got a number of irrational views, starting with his real commitment to religion. And it's not just an idle commitment. I mean, he's one of the sponsors of a constitutional amendment to define human life at birth, which I think is a horrific idea, even worse than banning abortion, because this would ban a lot more than abortion. But of course, he would ban abortion in all stages. And I think he takes these ideas seriously. I don't think he doesn't even do what his father did, which is say state rights, leave it to the states. He would just ban it outright. And his whole idea of life beginning at conception is worse than a ban on abortion. So you could take religion. Related to that, linked to that in some way, he has this, I think, certain level of sympathy towards conspiracy, irrational conspiracy theories. And I think this comes to mind with his anti-scientific view of vaccines. He embraces a lot of the anti-science around this. And I put aside the issue of whether they should be mandatory or not. I think there's some pretty strong science on the side of vaccines. I'm not saying they're risk-free, but the risks are relatively small and the risks of not taking them pretty high. And he has a bit of this, you know, vaccines cause autism, which I think has been clearly debunked by science. So that makes me feel uncomfortable with him. And there are other things like that where he's come out a little bit like his father. His father's worse, much worse. But he has this too. But then one of the things that really clinches it for me with him is the issue of foreign policy. It's not just that he has a foreign policy that says, look, we've overextended ourselves in the world. We really don't need to be everywhere. Let's focus on defending America, which is what he sometimes says, but it's not what he really believes. He's in some ways a pacifist. And his view of Iran is a good example of this. The whole perspective, I'm not going to get into the whole thing about Iran here. You could find my other podcasts and other places where I've talked about Iran. But the whole idea of negotiating with Iran, and he I'm sure will support Obama's deal with Iran and vote for it. That to me, I can't vote for a candidate who's going to support any candidate who supports the Iran deal. Well, again, I'm not supporting or not supporting any candidates, but anybody who supports this deal is doing an incredible injustice to this country and to the ideas of liberty and freedom. I think he believes that 9/11 was our fault, like his father did. If you take his father's foreign policy, if you take some ideas like the fact that Ron Paul is a huge fan of Putin's and is an apologist for Russian aggression, to the extent that Rand Paul is influenced by his father and influenced by that wing of the Libertarian Party, that really, really, really worries me. So I think because of his religion, because of his tendency towards irrational conspiracy theory-like stuff, and because of his nutty, in my view, foreign policy, I don't like Rand Paul, in spite of the fact that on many domestic issues, he's very, very good. And I'll just point out one. I do agree with Rand Paul's position on the NSA, where I think he's been very heroic on that. In spite of that, I think his vices outnumber his virtues. And add to that the fact that I don't think he's electable.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.